man who's been with WOW since he was a little boy, actually since the beginning of WOW, and he's been off on the mission field and with Youth with a Mission and traveling all over the place and lives in Hawaii, and he had an extreme accident at that time. And so we got an SOS call from his mom to Linda Garnett here, and we that Sunday just began, and since then sort of the word spread out to pray for Aaron Edgell. And he is here today kind of, I don't know how many miracles went into his rescue, but I have, he's visiting for a couple weeks, and I've asked him to come and share, and we're so grateful to have him with us today. So he's just going to come and share a little bit with us.
And his mom and dad are here too, so welcome Kim and Gloria.
Thanks, Bob. Yeah. Hi, guys. So for those of you who don't remember me, my name is Aaron. It's good to see you guys. My parents are Kim and Gloria. They're here today. I grew up in this church back when I was probably 12, I think, while I became a church plant, and we met in various schools, Mac Bay, I remember. And now you guys are out here, which is a pretty sick place. But I've been out of town for the last 4.5 years, for the most part, doing ministry. That's why you haven't seen me around. But I love being able to see everybody's faces again and meet some new people, and I'm really excited to be able to share with you a little bit about God's generosity. So God's generosity is something that's incredible. You will never meet a being that is more generous, a being that is more benevolent, a being that is more giving than the God of the Bible. He's just more than anything humans have ever heard of. He gives to everybody all the time. If you read James 1:17, it says, "Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights." Every good gift comes from God, every single one. That means every breath of air we breathe comes from God. Every, like Ross said, food is God's love made manifest. Every little gift we have, the fact that this floor holds us and doesn't give way, it's all from God. He's constantly giving it to us. You know, the Bible says God is love. He's agape love. And that love isn't just a feeling that he feels towards us. It's always accompanied by action. It's always accompanied by giving. And he's always giving to us constantly. Matthew 5:45 says he makes the sun rise on the evil and on the good. And he sends rain on the just and on the unjust. And God is constantly giving to both his followers and to people that are utterly rejecting him. To people that spit in his face, he still gives them all these gifts. And let me tell you, if God didn't want you to have these gifts, you wouldn't have them. If he didn't want you to have your next breath of oxygen, you wouldn't have it. So I hope that'll open your eyes a little bit to how much God is giving to us constantly. We're not even aware of, because we're so used to this always being the norm. And that's the story of the gospel. God gave to us when we completely didn't deserve it. He sent his son to come and to die for us, to offer himself for us when we utterly were rejecting him and scorning him. And he's just an amazing, generous giver, the most you've ever heard of. And I want to talk a little bit about what that's looked like in my life over this last season, as Barb was just talking about. You heard about my accident. So I was hiking in the jungle with some friends of mine, having fun, enjoying God's creation, and we wanted to climb this waterfall. You know, we're all young, we thought we'd have fun. But on the top of the waterfall, I ended up falling. It was about 20 foot, and I fell right onto rocks, and I broke 7 bones in both of my legs, both of my feet, and we were stranded in the jungle. My friends had to stop the bleeding and with rocks and leaves from the jungle, and they had to carry me piggyback 2 hours to get out of the jungle. And let me tell you, that was really not fun. It was really painful, very unpleasant. But through the whole thing, I was really able to see God's generosity towards me, which seems kind of paradoxical. But let me show you how. First, when I was falling off a cliff, I first hit my feet, and then I fell upside down, and I hit my neck before I landed in the water. But there was no problems in my neck or my spine or my head. I could be dead. I could be paralyzed, but I'm not, because of God's generosity. He was protecting me. He was giving to me in that. Second, as soon as this all happened, my mom, who was in a different time zone, she was asleep. She woke up, felt God told her to pray for wisdom on my behalf. And she did, and my rescuers figured out what to do to rescue me. It was God giving more. When I had this accident, my rescue party was ideal. Of the 4 other hikers that were with us, one of them was a nurse. She knew how to put me together. The other 3 were young men who were able to carry me out. They had the strength. It was like God perfectly orchestrated this rescue plan before it even happened. On our way out, we ended up running into some other hikers that had a cell phone that were able to call the ambulance before we got to the road. And when I was in the hospital, my local church kept visiting me. They provided medical equipment for me. And my local pastor allowed me to stay at his place. Me and my mom both stay at his place for a month while I needed a wheelchair-accessible place. Broke 7 bones, and I didn't need any surgery because they all broke in just the right way. They were going to come right back together. God was providing out of his generosity in so many ways through this incident. He provided through you guys. I was so honored when I heard that you guys had an offering for my medical bills. And I thank you so much for that. And your prayers, I have felt your prayers so much. You can see I'm walking and I'm doing everything that I need to do because of your prayers. You guys have shown God's generosity to me, and I so appreciate that. And even through this encounter, I was able to share some of God's generosity to another man in the hospital. You know, when you're in the hospital, there's another bed here next to you, usually. And there was a guy who came in that day who had broken his back. He was in a bicycling accident. He wiped out, hit a stump, and broke his back. And he was in a lot of pain. I was in a lot of pain. So we just started talking to get our minds off of the pain. And as we were talking all night, we just started sharing our whole life stories to one another. And turns out he wasn't a Christian. So I asked him, hey, you know, I don't know very many people that believe what you believe. Can I ask you some questions about it? He goes, yeah, I'd love that. You know, I don't know very many Protestant Christians. Can I ask you about what you believe? And so I was able to share the whole gospel with this guy. And whenever he was in too much pain, I would just pray out loud, healing over him. And within 24 hours, the next morning, he was discharged from the hospital faster than they could file his paperwork because he was healed. And he was bragging to his wife about how I was praying for him. He came back at the end of the week to visit me in the hospital, told me how he'd been swimming in the ocean and doing all these other adventure things after breaking his back. None of that would have happened if I hadn't been in the hospital, if I hadn't broken my legs. God used this opportunity so that I could be sharing his generosity with somebody else. Now, I'm sharing with you how all of the good things come from God. And sometimes it takes thankfulness to be able to see those good things. But what about the bad things? You know, if every single good thing comes from God, what about the bad things? Isn't he responsible for those too? And that is a very big question, one that I'm hard-pressed to answer in a few minutes. But a friend of mine used to say, God is not a communist. What does that mean? What do communists believe? Communists believe in the even distribution of wealth to every person. You take the same amount of money and you bless every single person evenly. If you look in the Bible, that's not how God operates. He doesn't give the same blessing to every person. He blesses every person uniquely. He has a unique call for everybody. For some people, they're born into wealthy families. Other people are born into poverty. Some people are raised in a family they know and love them. Other people never know their parents. Some people have super successful businesses and ministries. Other people are homeless. The blessings aren't even to everybody, but there are blessings for everybody. Who here has heard of a man named Nick Vujicic? There's a few. So he's pretty famous. He's a guy, he has no arms and no legs. No arms, no legs, completely limbless. The question I want to ask right now is, why do you guys have 4 working limbs and he doesn't? See, now God has blessed you guys. He's showed his generosity to you by giving you 4 working limbs. But he's also blessed Nick in a way that he hasn't blessed us. Nick has a mission. He travels the world sharing and encouraging people and sharing the gospel. And they listen to him because he doesn't have limbs, but he has joy and excitement and purpose in this life. And that's a mission that you and I don't have because we have limbs. They listen to him because he doesn't. Some people have blessings of one kind. Some people have blessings of a different kind. And sometimes the bad things happen as part of our mission to be able to reach other people. And that may sound kind of hard, but 2 Corinthians 4:17 says, "For this light momentary affliction is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison." And soon, for those of us that have chosen to accept Jesus, we're going to be in eternity forever, and all of these little problems are going to seem so brief. It's going to be like they never even happened. And the afflictions we're going through now are going to make that eternity even better. we're not even going to care about the stuff that happened here once we get into there, because it's going to be so worth it, and we can't even imagine it now. But we can't see that quite, because all of this stuff is up in our face. We can't see all the blessings that God has given us because of all the problems we're facing right now. And I think, I don't think God brings all of the bad things into our life. I think he brings all of the good things, but sometimes the bad things come because of our decisions. Sometimes the bad things come because we live in a fallen world. Sometimes the bad things come directly from Satan. And the Bible says God does not sin, God does not tempt. He does test, and he does discipline. And sometimes those things are very difficult. But they're always for a good reason, and they're always for a purpose. And that purpose is always worth it in the end. So what you guys are going through right now is difficult, and I don't know where it's coming from, but I know that God has a plan to bring it about for good. He has a plan to bring good out of it, just as he's used Nick's condition to reach people across the globe, and just as he used my broken feet to be able to pray for and heal this guy in the hospital. He can use what you're going through, and I don't know when it's going to make sense to you. Maybe it won't until you're in heaven, but there is a purpose, and you'll see it at some point. So when I was going through my trial, thing that the Lord really put on my heart was thankfulness, to come up with 10 things each day that I was thankful for. And it really allowed me to see all of the blessings that God gave me. 10 things, whether it was just the breakfast that I had that day, or a visitor I had in the hospital, or whatever it was, 10 simple things every day opened my eyes to his blessings and how he is constantly providing. And I challenge you guys to do the same thing. It will really change your perspective in life and the things that you're going through. But just know that God is blessing you right now. You're just not aware of it. And I hope that thankfulness will be able to help you see some of it, because God is not going to leave you where you are. But thank you, guys.
Thank you. Thank you, Aaron. Thanks so much. I feel very grateful for God sparing Aaron's life. What a good story. How awesome. Is that me? How awesome to have, you know, the things line up where he was able to be brought to a great rescue. We stand with your mom and dad, just really thankful that you're here. It's good. So we're going to finish up today. We've been in a series where we have been talking about the generosity of God. And as I met with Aaron this week and he shared his story, I said that would be perfect in line with the things that we've been talking about just how generous and how overwhelming that is. And I think we've been looking at this for the last couple months it's been. And so we've heard from all different perspectives, from Ross and Benjamin, and I can't even remember all the people that we've had share with Patty and Mark and Holly and Jim from the Indonesian Partnership. And we've just heard so many things about the different facets of the generosity of God. And last week, Ross spoke a little bit about just the call of God on our body here at WOW to be generous, and what some of the different components of the values and vision that he's given to us here. And Bill Miller then spoke about how we just are in this time where we've moved in, but we're seeing where things aren't functioning quite like they need to. And so we took up that offering, and just, I thought, at the end of the service, some of you were still here and some had left, and when they had counted up the money, it was like double plus what we had ever imagined. And I thought, wow, the generosity of God was really displayed through the people here at WOW. And I think we do have a very generous group of people that gather here week after week together. And I'm just so thankful for that. And I do, if you didn't get a chance to listen to last week's message, it was recorded. And I encourage you to go ahead and listen to that, because they had it's a great opportunity for us. So it's my job today to sort of close it together and bring it all together. And when I think of generosity, I so often, and I don't know why, I think of things like the widow's mite, where it's the person who has the least that always seems to be the most generous. And you know that story in the Bible where the lady who has absolutely nothing and she gives that one thing, and how, you know, she's noticed. It's noted by Jesus how giving, and how that was truly like a sacrifice that was really worthy and commendable. And I think back over my life of the people that I know that I would consider to be like super generous. I don't know, think about it a minute. The people in your life that you've known that you think, wow, those were really generous people. And this picture is being shown because some of the people that I, in my life, that I think of were some of the most generous people that I've met were the years that I was working in a Vietnamese refugee camp. And it was the poorest situation that I've ever sort of been in on a regular basis. But the people's generosity, maybe in contrast to what they had and how much they gave, it was incredible. I can remember sitting on these little bunk beds and people bringing these beautiful bowls of oranges. I think, where did these oranges come from? They're glorious. They're beautiful. Or they'd make me a cup of delicious Vietnamese tea that was, you know, thickened with that sweetened condensed milk. You get the picture? Oh, it was so good. Just what they gave out of their poverty. They gave out of the little bit that they had. And that really has made an impact and an impression on my life. And maybe you think of those people in your life that have been, that you've seen real generosity. Another one that came to my mind is a lady who many of you have met. We've talked about this family quite a bit. Lodi and Liu Posama, who are our some workers, some friends that live in Indonesia. And Liu oversees an orphanage and has for years and years that has anywhere between 150 and 180 children in it, and she has to feed them all. Now, the rice alone, three times a day for 150 children, I don't even remember. I mean, I did know at one time how many pounds that was, but it's a lot of rice, and it is a huge expense. And not only does she provide them with rice, but she makes sure that all the children that want to play an instrument get an instrument and have lessons. She makes sure that children have the three uniforms that they need to go to school on the different days of the week. She makes sure that the children that have problems with their teeth even get braces. I mean, it's incredible the things that she does. And I can remember one time our family, and those of you in my family that are here, one summer we had the blessing and the privilege to go and spend a month in the orphanage working with them and getting to know them and just, you know, playing with kids and hanging out. And my kids got so that they would be very careful if they said, like if we went to the shops or the market, they had to not say, oh, isn't this pretty? Because then the next thing you know what would happen? Liu would buy it and it would appear in our room. And so they had to be very careful that they didn't state things that they liked because she was so generous to my wealthy American children. But it would just show up in their rooms, right? So they had to be careful that they didn't speak too much about that. But I don't know if some of you know this story either. When we first started WOW, it was about 12 years ago, and Lodi and Liu were here with us for a time, and she had her children in her orphanage with the money that they got in. There was a season where they tithed to our church because they wanted to bless us. You cannot, and I had so many conversations with Liu about, stop. I feel so humbled by this. Your generosity, it's overwhelming me, you know. You don't need to do this. Give it to, you know. And she, her philosophy, though, and she said this in many different ways and times to me, was, Barb, I have lots of children that I have to look out for. And I know I don't have enough resources to do it. And so I need God to come through for me. I need him to come through. And this, me giving to you, is just me showing, I trust you, God. I trust you, God. So that is one of the reasons that she is so generous, because she knows she has to trust in God. And it's her way of saying, I trust in you, God. Isn't that a different way of looking at things? I mean, that just rattles my brain to think of the provision of God and the generosity. It's kind of like you hear about people you know, there's that statement that you, in order to get, you have to give. Well, which I'm like, that seems a bit selfish. But with Liu, that's really the way it is. But it's an act of her trust in God. So those are some of the stories that I can think of. And it's always a humbling place when you think of people that are so generous. I've also, as I've been considering the generosity of God, been thinking of creation. And especially as it's summertime here in Michigan, and don't you love to be outside? I mean, our household, we eat out every single meal that we possibly can because we just love to be outside and just enjoying the things around us. And my dear Abby put these little pictures together for me as we were, I was just thinking of the rainbows, God's creation of rainbows. I mean, that he bent light. It just shows such abundance when you think of the rainbows that God put in the sky. Or what about sunsets? You ever take a chance to go down to Lake Michigan and watch one of the sunsets? I so often, as I'm sitting there with the gorgeous colors in the sunsets, I think, oh, if I could paint. But then I think, if I put that color on a brush and on a thing, you'd probably think it doesn't even look real. It looks artificial, because in comparison to the painting of a sunset that God does, it's just spectacular, right? And every day, a different one. And then we've got the flowers. I mean, God could have, if he was going to make flowers, why didn't he just go this one sort? But no, he made a huge array of flowers for us to enjoy. It speaks of the generosity of a creator when we think of just the vastness of the types of flowers and smells and just the way they're made. And then there's the birds. I was talking to somebody the other day about, you know, you're getting old when you start to watch all the birds. After we hit about 45 or 50, birds feeders started appearing in our yard. Because we enjoy watching the birds and we notice all the sounds and calls of the red-winged blackbirds. Or, you know, nothing makes me feel better than when a hummingbird, well, maybe an oriole does at this point. But, you know, to watch just the beauty of, you know, they violate even the laws of aerodynamics, right? They say a hummingbird shouldn't be able to fly. It's just amazing the way creation speaks of the generosity of God, doesn't it? And we could go on and on. And then there's the crown of his creation, which is people. And when I think, again, God could have made us all look the same, right? Functional. But no. Not only if we look around this room, but when we look around the world and the beauty of the different cultures and design of God in, you know, almond-shaped eyes, round eyes, dark skin, light skin. It's just the textures of hair alone. It just speaks of how generous God is, doesn't it? When we take a moment and notice how these things really do lead us. We don't worship the creation, but boy, does the creation lead us to an appreciation for our Creator. So today, aren't those beautiful? I love those babies. Man. So today I'm going to talk about the generosity of God through a scripture that is maybe an unlikely place, because sometimes we also find generosity, as I said, in the widow's mite or in Liu or in the people that you wouldn't necessarily notice. I'm going to just share a story that's from our text today that shows and just unpack for you a little bit. Maybe you haven't thought about this story in light of the generosity of God, but that's what I'm going to bring it to you in today. Sometimes stories in the Bible, have you ever noticed that they're really hard to understand? Yes. Sometimes I get mad when I read the stories in the Bible because I think that is so unfair. I don't even understand how that works, especially Old Testament stories, right? sometimes because of the times that they're in, just the very cultural context of things, it can be a little bit difficult to understand what the world that these stories were brought into. So this is one of those stories that is a little bit hard to understand, so we're not going to get too stuck in the details, but we're going to look at the humanity and who God is and some of the emotions that we can relate to in this, because it was a different cultural time than we live in today. Is that all right with you? So you'll go with me there? Okay, this is a story of Hagar in the Bible. Hagar and Sarah and Abraham. So we're not going to get snagged in the details. So this is some passages that are from Genesis 21. And this is where we find Abraham and Sarah. And Abraham had been promised by God sometime earlier that he would have a son, and his son, his descendants, would outnumber the stars in the sky. Have you ever been out to look at the stars in the sky? Well, I did the other night. I sat outside after it was dark, and I just, as I was reflecting on this, and I looked up into the stars in the sky, and I want to tell you something. There are a lot of them. I could not count them. I couldn't. There are so many stars. They are beautiful. But there are a lot of them. And that was the promise of the descendants that Abraham was going to have. He had one problem, and that was that his wife was barren. And this was a time when there was no IVF. Barrenness meant barrenness. So, and at that time also, it was a great shame to not be able to bear children, because a woman's job was to produce offspring. And that would not only carry on her line, the line of the husband, to make the descendants, but also it was like a social security for her. It was the way of, it's kind of like my social security. Just kidding. My children are laughing hard. So, because that was going to be her social security in her old age, was the children that they had. So God makes this promise to Abraham, and years start ticking by. Nope, she's still barren. Nope, she's still barren. How is this going to be? They don't know. So God and Abraham have this conversation, and Abraham assumes that it's going to be through a servant, like the lead servant. And God says to him, no, Abraham, it is going to be through your own body. You will actually be the father, the biological father of these descendants. It's not just going to be the chief, you know, the chief servant in your house. And so it says in chapter 15 of Genesis that Abraham believed the Lord, and it was credited to him as righteousness. So he becomes, that's the story. We know that. That scripture then comes forward in the New Testament too, that was the point that Abraham believed, and it was actually credited to him. He believed in the promise of God. He saw nothing of it. He had a barren wife, and it wasn't going to be through someone else's loins. It was going to be through him, and he believed it. And he hung on to that belief, that promise that God had. Well, Sarah also had heard of this promise, and yet she was barren. And so she felt so bad about it that she actually took things into her own hands. And this is the part that's a little different for us in our culture, is that we just don't do this. We don't say, okay, well, you can have my slave girl. But that was in keeping with the times. And so she said, take this slave Hagar. Perhaps I can build my family through her. And so Abraham says, okay. He goes along with this. Sidebar. It seems sometimes in the story, when you read this like about 5 or 6 chapters, there are a number of things that Abraham just goes, okay. He just kind of goes along with the crowd. I'm doing some Enneagram work. This is totally a sidebar. I'm doing some Enneagram study, and That whole thing of conflict avoider, I really think he might be a conflict avoider. But anyway, he goes along with the plan. And as the pregnancy progresses, Hagar, who is now with child, begins to despise Sarah. She just can't stand her. And of course, Sarah is very jealous at this point. And so the two basically don't coexist very well. The barren wife and the servant that is pregnant with Abraham's child. So Abraham doesn't know what to do. So he says to Sarah, well, do whatever you want to do with her. I don't care. Again, maybe a little bit of conflict avoiding. So what Sarah does is she mistreats her. She treats her very badly. And in the end, Hagar runs away. She has to flee the scene because of the mistreatment of her mistress, Sarah. This is, I wonder if this is where that, you know, you can run but you cannot hide. I wonder if this is the story that it comes from. Because she runs, but you know what, who she couldn't hide from? A loving God who pursues her. It says that actually God went looking for her. God went out into the wilderness looking for Hagar, and he found her running. And he speaks to her and says, go back and be obedient to what's there, and I have a promise for you. And the promise is that your descendants will increase on the earth, and they too will be too numerous to count. You're to call him Ishmael, which means the Lord hears your misery. And she's famous then for saying, you are the God who sees me, and now I have seen the one who sees me, which is the first time that God is actually, his name is given at that time, called El Roy, which means the Lord who sees. So here she is cast out, and she has this conversation, kind of it seems like face to face, where she sees God. God sees her and she sees God. And he makes a promise to this slave woman that her descendants will be great on the earth, and go back. Don't run. You can run, but you can't hide. Go back. Because that was where she was going to receive the blessing. So she went back, and some years later, and she raises her son, and Abraham is involved in that raising. So he gets to be about, Ishmael is his name, and he, by the time he's about 13 or 14 years old, Abraham hears from the Lord again through these three men. You probably remember this story, the three men that come to him that are angels of the Lord, and they say, this isn't the one. I think maybe he thought that this was the promised child, but he says, no. This is not the child of promise. Sarah is to bear the child of promise. And there's that conversation where Sarah actually laughs, where she overhears the angel and says, how can this be? I'm barren. I cannot. You know, and she laughs about that. So this is, and within a year, Sarah actually does find herself pregnant with a child just as had been promised. So now we have Ishmael, who's 13 years old at this time, and a new baby. So it's long periods. It's a few verses or a few chapters, but it's years and years that pass while they're waiting. So when Joe was talking this morning about waiting, sometimes we do wait for the things to come to pass. But today our text is found, that was sort of the background, our text is found in Genesis 21. And it's in this place that the Lord, in his graciousness, has kept his promise to Abraham and Sarah. She bears the son. They call him Isaac. Remember, this is an impossible situation. A big part because, you know how old Sarah is? She's in her 90s. You do not have babies in your 90s, right? You don't. I'm in my 50s, and just running around after my grandchildren is exhausting. I love it, but it's a lot more tiring than it was than when I was in my 20s. But here is Sarah in her 90s, and Donette's laughing. She knows exactly what I'm talking about. So she is dead. Her womb, for all practical purposes, is dead. And yet she bears this son. And his older, so this is the younger son of Ishmael. So this is the verse now, that the child grew and was weaned. And on the day Isaac was weaned, Abraham held a great feast. They held a feast when this child was weaned, probably because he'd gotten past those first years. So he would have been 3 to 5 years old, and he'd actually gotten past infancy. So they had a big celebration. But Sarah saw that the son whom Hagar, the Egyptian, had borne to Abraham was mocking. And she said to Abraham, "Get rid of that slave woman and her son, for that woman's son will never share in the inheritance of my son Isaac." So here we have it again. They're not getting along real well in this household. She calls it her son. She doesn't refer to him. She doesn't even refer to him as being Abraham's son. It's just her son. And can you imagine what that felt like to be Hagar at that time? Just think of the conflict that would be going on within her. And then the next part says, the matter distressed Abraham greatly because it concerns his son. But God said to him, "Do not be so distressed about the boy and your slave woman. Listen to whatever Sarah tells you, because it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. I will make the son of the slave into a nation also, because he is your offspring." So Abraham is greatly distressed because it's fair to assume that he loved Ishmael. He raised Ishmael as his son also. He was not despised by Abraham. He was loved. He was a loved son of Abraham. They had been circumcised together. That was the first time when circumcised had entered. And Ishmael and Abraham had been circumcised together. So this was a son that had been raised not as an Egyptian. He had been brought into the household of Abraham and been raised with their patterns and their ways of believing and his God. So Ishmael was right there with him. So to cast him out would have caused, can you imagine that? The great distress that would have caused for Abraham as his father. I'm sure it was a huge temptation at this time for him to try and figure this all out. How can I keep everybody happy? How can I make it all work out smoothly? But he goes to God and he says, "No, allow it to be so." So early in the morning, the next morning, Abraham took some food and a skin of water and gave them to Hagar. And he set them on her shoulders and he sent her off with the boy. She went on her way and wandered in the desert. When the water in the skin was gone, she put the boy under some of the bushes. Then she went off and sat down a ways away, for she thought, "I cannot bear to watch this boy die." And there she sat, and she began to sob. God heard the boy crying, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said, "What is the matter, Hagar? Do not be afraid. God has heard the boy crying as he lies there. Lift the boy up and take him by the hand, for I will make him into a great nation." Then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. So she went and filled the skin with water and gave the boy a drink. God was with the boy as he grew up. He lived in the desert and became an archer while he was living in the desert of Paran. His mother got a wife for him from Egypt. It seems in some ways when you look at that it might have been the easy way out. I don't know, for Abraham to, you know, again, a conflict avoider to send him out. But it was more than that. This was part of the plan of God. And this is where I said, you know, some of these things are hard. It's hard to understand this because we live in such a different context. It seems heartbreaking that this woman is cast off like that. And I, as I wrestle with this, I do think that. I think it would have been so hard to be that woman in that place. First, she was sent off in her pregnancy or had to run away. And now she's being sent off with a child all on her own. And yet God in his love and generous heart for her, he made himself known to her in that place. And I can tell you that in the times of life when you feel despairing, you have nowhere to turn, you don't know which way is up, been there? No options seem like good options. It seems like maybe all your friends or family or whatever has abandoned you. You know what makes all the difference? That there is a God who sees and is with you. I have story after story in my life when I have felt that way. Maybe not as dramatically as Hagar, but where I have felt that sense of aloneness or being abandoned or, you know, betrayed or cast off or any of those things. And time after time, the thing that makes a difference is knowing that God, that I have a God who sees and is with me no matter what. And that is the same God that Hagar had in that place. And God saw her. It says that he heard her affliction. It doesn't even say that he heard her prayers, because we don't even know if she prayed. She was an Egyptian woman. But he heard her affliction. That's the kind of God that we have, a God that hears the affliction that we have. He is right there to be with us. I think it's also, you know, it speaks to me of God being, you know, there's sometimes we can view life as it's the good guys and the bad guys, and we're the good guys, right? I'm always the good guy. If I tell a story about something somebody did me wrong, you can guarantee that I'm the good guy in the story, right? When we hear each other's stories, pretty much whoever you're listening to, you hear that person. Do you get what I'm saying? You hear that person's story, and it's framed through us being the good guys. We've been done wrong. But the crazy thing, have you found this in life? If you go over and listen to the other person's story, they're the good guy too. Have you ever noticed that? When you've arbitrated maybe arguments between your children or all kinds of situations, and it seems a little confusing because where is the good guy here? Whose side do I take? Well, I have been around long enough to know that we have to listen to those things and then hold it before God, because he is the only one that truly sees and knows and is the one that is always, like Aaron said, it isn't always fair or equal. I should say that it's not always equal, but it's always fair and just according to God. We don't always see the whole picture. You know, I learned a big lesson that it's kind of that never-ending lesson. And I'm going to go back to an experience that we had years ago when we lived in Indonesia. And our experience in Indonesia was that we entered a business partnership with a businessman there. And my side of the story, we were taken advantage of. They got all of our ideas and contacts and built a business, and we were basically ripped off, and we had to leave the country, literally without, like, our visas were taken from us, and we had to leave the country. So that's a very short version of a very long, winding, sad story of our lives. But that caused me at that time to say, I don't care if I never go back to Indonesia. I really don't care. I don't like that place. I don't like those people. They ripped us off. I wasn't abandoned by my husband, but I was 6 months pregnant, had two little kids. I mean, it was a bad time, right? And I sort of held it that way for years and years. And it wasn't until 13 or 14 years later that we went back to Indonesia. And the person who had been the one, the business person who had really, you know, ripped us off, had now started hospitals in Indonesia. And he had, he was very benevolent and had given generously into many, many things far beyond what we could have ever done. Far, far beyond it. Just in abundance. he had given. And I looked at some of the buildings that belong to him now as we drove through the streets, and I just was like, I don't get it. I do not get it. We were right. He was wrong. You know, that sort of idea. You should have blessed us and cursed him. It didn't happen that way because Barb's not God. And I was confronted at that time with something that is a hard truth, and that is that I don't know all the pieces, and that God is God and I'm not. And I at that time repented and released forgiveness and wept and prayed for blessing in this man's life and their family and their work. And my prayer up until that time had been, okay, God, vengeance is mine. I'm not going to do anything about it, but you'll repay. You'll get him back. And God did not get him back the way I thought he should. Instead, he was gracious and abundant and generous and used this man to be a blessing in that nation of Indonesia. Sometimes we just don't fully get it, right? But we do all that to say that God is abundantly generous to all parties. I'm not saying that sin is okay. Don't hear me saying that. Or that being cruel is okay or any of those things. But what I'm saying is that God is generous and he doesn't always see things. And sometimes we do have to release things up. Not sometimes. We do have to release things up to him in order to for ourselves. He gets it. He's already there. But for ourselves and our understanding, because God is always for all people, and he shows himself in the most unlikely of places, just like he did with Hagar, an Egyptian slave woman. So one of the things that because it's the end of our series, I want to give you guys, I hope you don't mind, I have a little assignment for you. My heart in our church, in our community here, is to really see each of us grow in our understanding of who God is, but not just in our, like, our mind that we just, I love when we read the Word and you're in the Bible and you're understanding from that point and growing and doing study and all of that, but I really long for us all to really grow in our understanding of God's generosity, of how much he loves us, of how overflowing he is into our lives, because I believe that that's where we can reach out to others, because we're like that conduit that just let it come. When we're fearful and stingy, it gets kept right here. But when we understand, then we can freely give as well. So I was thinking about this, just the whole thing of generosity, and what would it look for us to be more in a place of being generous ourselves. And I think it really is as we understand more of the generosity of God to us. And as I showed earlier, those clips of creation, I think that that's one of the greatest ways, not only in people and in stories, but that in creation that we can experience a generosity. So I've written out a little invitation for you all, hopefully from God, but from me, to a summer bucket list. So I've written an invitation. So I'd like a couple of you, Ross and Abby, do you want to, Diego too, maybe you want to pass these out. And I'd like you to just take a moment and look at this bucket list. And then I want you to take the back and you can write some of your own things. But on this are places where I invite you, I don't command you, but I invite you to spend some time in the next couple months in the summer where we can enjoy the outdoors and really put yourself into some places. Take your children with you. Take your grandchildren with you. Take your friends with you. And go to some of these places and enjoy the generosity of God. And take those quiet moments and let it sink in. As I told you the other night, I was sitting outside when it was quiet at my house, and I saw the stars. And what I also saw was fireflies all over that were joining in the stars and lighting up. And then what I began to hear was the frogs and the crickets and whatever else was out there. And I just had this 10-minute, woo, God is so big and great. And I would want all of us to have to put ourselves in those places where we can experience the generosity of God in creation. And, yeah. Does that sound like a fun bucket list? Good. And at the end, it has that verse, I will give thanks to you, Lord, with all my heart, and I will tell of all of your wonderful deeds. So I don't know if some of you here feel like you're needing to see the generosity of God. Maybe you've had some hard times and feel like it's a bit tough, and you just need to open yourself up to maybe see some things a little bit differently, to experience what God has for you in this season of your life. But do you want to come up? You can just...
Why don't we stand together, shall we? You know, Father, I thank you for being a good, good father. And from Aaron's story about Nick Wojciech without any limbs,